Welcome back to another episode of The Change Starts Here, where hopefully you've noticed where we dive into a world of, in the heart of what makes a difference in our schools, our communities, and in our world. I'm Dustin Odom, and today I want to talk to you about something that's fundamental to every relationship, every classroom, and every school district, and that's trust. Now, trust isn't just some warm and fuzzy concept we talk about when things are going well. It's actually the bedrock of everything we do. Without trust, our efforts, no matter how well-intentioned, fall flat. That's why I want to introduce you to, hopefully, a game-changing book that has been making waves, I would say, for years. It's one of the books that led me here. It's one that is not the latest and greatest book, but one that is so tried and true in terms of helping people, one, look in the mirror and examine themselves, but two, and most importantly in this conversation, how do you build trust in an organization to accomplish the great goals that you have? And so that book is of no surprise to anyone listening. It's The Speed of Trust by Stephen M. R. Covey. We're spending this semester, the start of the first episode of every month, we're going deep into the content in two ways. One, I'll do a quick monologue to kind of lay the groundwork. And then two, we're going to have a guest each week that's focused just on helping us dive deeper into the content. So some of you listening might be saying, I know, you've heard Stephen M. R. on this podcast a couple of times. This is old. Yes, but I would just tell you, this content is needed now more than ever. And so with that, I'm just going to get going. So in The Speed of Trust, MR makes a compelling case that trust is not merely a soft social virtue, but it's a hard edge economic driver. He talks about how trust affects two key outcomes, speed and cost. When trust goes up, speed goes up and costs go down. But when trust go down, everything slows down. And costs, both financial and emotional, skyrocket. Now, if that doesn't make you want to think about the way we lead our schools, I don't know what will. Just take a second and think about the initiatives that you've tried to roll out in your school, your district. How many times have those initiatives been delayed, derailed, or downright dismissed because of a lack of trust? Whether it's trust between the administration and teachers, teachers and parents, or even among students. It's clear that without trust, our best laid plans don't stand a chance. The Speed of Trust is not just about identifying the problem. It's actually about offering practical solutions. And MR, as he always seems to do, gives us a framework, a language really, that we can use to build and repair trust in our schools and our districts. He talks about the four cores of credibility. Those four cores are integrity, intent, capabilities, and results. What I love about those is that these are things that we can all work on. Integrity, do we have integrity, operating out of integrity? Our intent with others and our work, our capabilities, so areas that we can grow in, and then the results that we're getting. Again, these are things that we can all work on no matter what our role is. And the beautiful thing about, I would say, MR's book, and specifically in this case, is that it's actionable. Stephen M. R. isn't just content to tell us what's wrong. He gives us the tools to fix it. It's like, I would say, we're in the middle of football season. So it's like having a playbook for building a culture where trust is the default setting, not the expectation. Imagine what your school, your district would look like if trust was at the center of every decision you made or your team makes. How much faster could you move? How much more could you achieve? As I said at the beginning of this podcast, our outline over the next, at least for the next month of solo episodes, are a quick outline for me of that topic, and then a deep dive with an expert. So we're going to dive in a second with one of my dear friends, Jill Shulin, who has been an educator for a long time, but also a long time leader and consultant and coach in our world. And so she's going to help us dive deeper. So as you listen to that today, I want you to think about, where does trust show up in your own work? Maybe it's in the way you communicate with your team, the way you engage with parents, how you interact with students. Wherever it is, I challenge you to lean into that trust, to nurture it, and to see how it transforms not just your work, but the lives of everyone around you. As I've said, the Speed of Trust is more than just a book. It's a blueprint for leading in a way that inspires confidence, fosters collaboration, and drives meaningful change. And isn't that what we're all here to do? Let's build trust as you go throughout this semester. If you've not read it or listened to the book on tape, oh man, did I just age myself. If you've not read The Speed of Trust, or I don't even listen on tape. I've got my Amazon app for this. I would just encourage you to dig back through and then come back with a new lens every time you come back and listen to an episode. So with that, let's dive into this conversation with Jill. And thank you. Thank you so much for giving us your time and your trust. Because I know your time is so precious. Thank you for spending here with us. And I look forward to developing you and diving to trust this semester with you. Jill, it is exciting to have you, my dear friend, be the first guest that we have on these kind of solo / Franklin Covey content episodes. I know life is crazy for you right now, both personally and professionally in terms of busyness. So I thank you for making time to be here with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here with you, Dustin, and here.
Yeah, well, you and I have known each other for over a decade now, and I would consider you a very, very dear friend of mine. And so the topic of trust is one that I think we have in spades, and I feel really honored to have that with you. And so as we kick off this Speed of Trust, semester, I wanted to be able to dive in with you because you've had a lot of experience with this. So to that end, here's a simple question. What does trust mean to you, and why is it so critical to effective leadership?
Well, I just believe deeply in what our content says trust is, and it really resonates when you match up character and competence in an individual, that equals trust, and it really takes both sides of that.
So when you think about trust, I mean, you've been in districts and schools for, years and years now, but like in terms of our work, doing Speed of Trust work for a decade, what's the first thing you notice in a high trust environment, and what's the first thing you notice in a low trust environment? And obviously you don't need to share any of those district names, but I'm just curious, is it really easy for you to see? And if so, what are the cues that you're looking for to gauge?
Yeah, I think, Dustin, a pattern that I notice is the amount of trust that an organization or a team has for their leader, and equal to that, how much the leader has for the team or the stakeholders that they're working with. And oftentimes where I see a struggle is where that's one avenue versus two-way street, and an organization or team not even realizing that that's the case. It's almost as if it's an inhale and exhale. It really requires both, and you can't just have it one-sided.
Yeah, so, we both love the trust content, but we're both, I would say we're our biggest fans, but we're also our biggest critics, which I think keeps us a healthy skeptics to continue to grow. When I hear you talk about trust, if I'm trying to analyze and try to figure out, am I a trustworthy person? Does my team trust me? How do you help people figure out how to measure that, how to make it actionable? Because it feels very fluffy in a way, like I care deeply, but I don't know. I think I'm a trustworthy person. I care about people. Like how do you even start coaching people how to measure that and start improving on it?
That's a great question. I think, one of the things that in the coaching space that I think is critical for someone who's trying to help someone else assess their level of trust is to really get to know the person, to know the question or just the topic to put in front of them to help them see it themselves. We've got individuals that we work with all the time that are just, they are the doers. And the way you ask questions of those will help them really elicit awareness for themselves versus a visionary. And so there's homework and preparedness that occurs when you're in the coaching role with trust, because in order for someone to see themselves at the level in which is perhaps more reality, the coach really needs to do the homework to know how to drive those questions that they can kind of self discover that.
Yeah. Well, for you specifically, how do you engage in your own self-reflection to assess it, right? Like I feel like, you know, we talk about this a lot. There's a lot of nuance to it because I do think, even with my team, like I'm certainly trustworthy, but I know I do things that hurt trust from time to time. And so how do you, one, analyze your own level of trust, as well as like, how do you figure out which areas to grow in so that you can be more and more trustworthy for the people around you?
It's a great question. Dustin, you and I have actually had this conversation similar to before, where when we think about being in a leadership role, it's really critical, as we've discussed, to have feedback come from those who maybe on an org chart are above you and those who you serve regularly, but even more importantly, those that are lateral to you. And I think just for me personally and professionally, I really do I put a conscious effort in getting regular feedback, even weekly feedback on all three of those levels, because what one might see at a different level, the others are not going to say maybe as transparently if they're lateral to me.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think a question I got the other day about trust, so it was kind of similar to this. And again, guys, if you've listened to this podcast for a long time, you know I want to spend a lot more time with Jill, and we can do that in the later episode. Our goal is to be quick and to the point in this episode, and it's really hard for me. So I'm trying to balance my curiosity with getting to questions that really matter. Someone asked me recently, like, Dustin, I love speed of trust, but like, you know, how do you manage creating this high trust culture with real accountability? Because I feel like if I give too much of myself, or if I get to know people too well to create that like real deep trust, I will lose the ability to hold them accountable. How do you respond to that? Because that's something that, as that person asked me, I was like, that's a great question. I don't necessarily operate with that same skepticism, but I would definitely assume there's plenty of leaders that would operate there.
Yeah, I look at it in two big buckets, I think. There's the, you know, the first five trust behaviors are really more about character. The next five are, of course, about competence. And the other three really require both. I think, you know, we all sit in sessions, meetings, you know, fill in the blank where we're doing check-ins, or, hey, we're just establishing the room in whatever session that we're in. And I think in the two buckets that I think are really critical, using that time and space to kind of set the tone for the session, and really as a leader, helping determine, is this more of a character conversation that we need to have in the beginning to help people really self-assess how they're coming in with character? Or are we talking strategy today? Are we thinking like, do we need to really think about competence and reflect on competence before we go into this topic? I don't believe in just haphazard check-ins. I believe that we look at an agenda, we know which one of those like very, very much character / motivational versus strategic competence needs to be at play. And I think that that's a really intentional way to set the stage for constant self-assessment aligned with whatever it is that the topics are coming later.
That's great. You know, I've joked about before, as much as we love speed of trust, there are 13 trust behaviors. And, you know, we love to number things here at Franklin Covey with the 7 habits, which is really effective, but 13, I'm already overwhelmed. And I've read the book a few times, been to the training a few times, you've delivered it countless times. How do you help people simplify those 13 behaviors to make it actually real? Because I don't know if many people can remember it off the first go. And so how do you make it more simple so it becomes more actionable?
That's a great question. A little different than the 7 habits, right? Because we have a very much of an inside out sequence to that. And with the trust behaviors, yeah, they may be a little bit more organized, but not necessarily sequenced. So again, character, if we can just think about maybe not 13 separately, but we think about, you know, what does character mean to us, and looking at those trust behaviors, but then identifying with your team or your leadership, hey, what does character really mean to me? And how does that align to my values? So setting that aside, being like one chunk. And then of course, competence in the 13 trust behaviors says this, but what does it look like? And how does that play out in our team? Because what you're competent in, Dustin, and what I'm competent in are two different things coming into a team meeting. So getting more specific around, okay, when we think about trust and competency, what am I bringing to the table and how should I be showing up for you and the team? And then of course, those three that carry over, which are so critical, just really using those three as an underlying, hey, we should just always be seeking to understand and we should always be extending trust, because if you've got an idea, you know, it's just a great place to be to keep just those three buckets, maybe not 13 in isolation, but those three buckets in mind.
Yeah, I love the idea of extending trust and grace. I, You know, one curiosity I have that I've never asked you is, you know, you're doing coaching and deep coaching and training for districts in this content, as well as a number of our content, but definitely this content on a day in and day out basis. What trust behaviors are you seeing most recently pop up as the challenges consistently, you know, no matter what type of district you're in or what region? Are there certain behaviors that everyone's kind of struggling with now? And do you have advice on how do you help people start tackling that?
I think the theme kind of falls under the word courage. You know, individually, executive coaching sessions, and maybe even just collectively with executive teams, particularly at the district level, that theme of courage comes up most often. And really what, you know, maybe that means is two trust behaviors often kind of surface very quickly in those sessions. And that is confronting reality, but it's not necessarily always the reality out there. It's the reality within the leader and how they actually see themselves. I find that leaders, as you probably do too, are much harder on themselves than the actual reality is out there oftentimes, where they're very forgiving of others, but they just can't let go of it for themselves. So the confronting of the reality for oneself can be very difficult for a lot of executive leaders.
Yeah, I'm sitting here laughing just because I'm thinking number of conversations we have. I'm like, I love to lift others up, but man, my self-talk can cripple me some days. So it's a little refreshing that you're seeing that time and time again. And so how do you help people kind of break that cycle, right? Because you're doing executive coaching for folks. And so you can even put me on the couch if you want to, but how do you help people who, you know, believe in others, lift others up, are the right people, but you can also tell in your honest, you know, off the record conversations with them that they really struggle with negative self-talk. How do you help break them out of that habit?
Well, this might sound so obvious, but the answer is a different trust behavior. It's helping them create real transparency for themselves. You know, we often talk as a leadership team about, hey, it isn't that we want to feel better or we want others to feel better, but we want to better feel. We want to know the emotions. We want to know what people are experiencing. And we also have to be honest with ourselves to understand what we're experiencing. And so it's really about helping individuals create their own reality and transparency so they're confident and comfortable enough to not only accept it for themselves, but then be able to share it with a team. Because Dustin, as you know, when you are that vulnerable, you can really lift trust pretty quick.
Oh yeah. But unfortunately, sometimes it can be used against you. So you have to figure out how to make sure it's not being weaponized.
Yes.
As you're going through it. There's a lot of folks, I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, Ashley, my wife, who you know well, in the midst of their schools have been underperforming, and there's a lot of work to be done. And so right now there could be, this would not be what Ashley would ever say, but there could be folks that say, Jill, this sounds awesome, but I don't have time for this right now. It sounds too soft, too rainbows and unicorns, as I like to joke around all the time. What is your response to folks who push back and say, I don't have time for this right now because we've got too many other important issues to tackle?
You know, it's funny. I was just recently, even as recent as today, in an experience that somewhat challenged my own trust behaviors, if you will, where I sent a text to my team, which involves different cross-functional teams, different teams within our organization. And I sent a text last week, really more out of efficiency, because I was heading out of town to drop my, you know, first child off to college, as you know. And it was just what I intended for it to be, a quick text of follow-up for one of our clients. It wasn't received well. In other words, it was received of, oh, does she think maybe that we aren't on that? And so I'm answering your question to say that it's really never about efficiency. And if I would have just picked up the phone and called any one of those team members, and they're all amazing individuals, it would have probably taken 5 minutes versus, you know, 10 seconds of the text. But I think, to answer your question, it's really the speed of trust, as it's called by title, really does speed up when you just pause and ensure that the intent is pure. And of course, this morning I spent my morning righting the wrongs and talking to people and having conversations. But we don't want to have to do that, right? We don't want to have to react to that. But it's important that we do, because it's an important trust behavior that we right the wrongs.
Yeah, it's so true. But it's funny, you think, like, so often, especially now, as leaders, I've seen some bad behaviors be hiding behind emails and, like you said, texts, which again is not either of our MO, but like we can all fall prey to it from time to time. But folks will argue, well, it's just easier to get it done that way. And yes, to your point, it may be efficient, but it may not be as effective because you may be hurting trust. You may be creating more work on the back end versus instead of a 30-second email, it could have been a 5-minute call. Well, you sent the text and now you've got a couple hours of calls possibly if you want to make sure everybody's on the same page with you still, right?
You got it. You
got it. That's
crazy. It's about timing too, right? And it's also about, you know, really being honest with the level of trust that you have with somebody, because you can take it for granted sometimes that, hey, they'll just know what I mean by this. Depending upon the time of year, that's not always the case because stressors are higher in certain times and seasons.
Yeah. So last thing, if someone's listening right now and they want to start engaging with applying the principles of the speed of trust today, what's your advice to helping people take baby steps as they're thinking through this and really starting to take these steps to build a strong trust culture?
So anybody who's listening to this today most likely has access to just the Leader in Me online. And Dustin, I just kind of took a quick peek this morning just to refresh my own self, you know, delivering this content, just to see how many quick 5-minute or less assessments that we have out there. We have more than a dozen. And it doesn't matter if you're a classroom teacher, an executive leader, an individual, or a team or a principal. They're out there. And so it's a great self-starter to be honest with yourself to go, okay, here's where I'm growing. And I'd love to engage in having a conversation with a coach about what do I do to help continue to get better, if you will, another trust behavior.
That's great. Well, Jill, I could spend all day with you. I'm doing my best to make sure I honor the 10 to 15 minute window that I committed to, which I've never done, but I figured starting with someone I have a long-term relationship with probably make it a little bit easier to cut off. Thank you for making time. I really appreciate it. I can say confidently from your time as a principal to, you know, the last 10 years or so working here with me at Franklin Covey, trust is how you lead best. And it's just awesome to be in your orbit. And I just wish you the best as you continue to move forward. And thank you for making time for us.
Thanks, Dustin. Likewise, back to you.
All right. See ya.